down by the water.
Welcome back to season 2 of the Run Culture Podcast. My name is Dane Verway. I'm an experienced running physiotherapist, coach, and marathoner. This season will involve open discussions with my running colleagues about the key principles behind injury-free running and optimal performance. It'll be backed by personal experience, science, and history. I can only hope some of these chats inspire curiosity and expand or confirm perspectives and beliefs amongst the running community. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Run Culture Podcast. Today, it's my absolute honor and privilege to be talking to Josef Frusek of Fighting Monkey and Rootless Roots, all the way from Greece. Welcome to the show, Josef.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so happy to be here.
Josef, I've been listening and following your work for a couple of years now. I've listened to nearly every podcast you've done that I can get my hands on. I've often rewinded them and re-listened. Josef, you're one of the most creative thinkers I've come across. You have a history personally in performing arts and sport, and it's your ability to beautifully articulate and appreciate the importance of the stuff we can't measure, like coordination, rhythm, communication, creativity, attunement, intuition, improvisation, etc. In movement that needs to be heard. It's why I really wanted you to get on the podcast today, so that some of the Australians down here can hear it. I can only hope I can keep up with your creative mind, and I'll do my best. So, Josef, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation.
Josef, would you mind introducing yourself and a bit about what you do?
Yeah, of course. I am coming from Slovakia. I was growing in a very mountainary kind of landscape. So I was in the mountains a lot, where I was running and climbing and foraging and hunting with my father. So that's how my childhood started. And of course, my father wanted always me to be an athlete. So I started very early. And I kind of loved that competitive area, although I was very frustrated always when it didn't go well. But I loved it. I loved the fun of individual sport, but also collective sports, and it was very enjoyable. And I'm so thankful that he gave me that opportunity. But also in the same time, you know, when I was young, I always wanted to be an artist, wanted to be an actor. You know, I kind of enjoyed the idea that I could be born and die as many times as I want, and as I can be part of the any environment I can imagine. So I could create something that doesn't exist, a world that never existed before. And since then, I was oscillating between these two worlds, the world that is predefined by culture. So sport is super well-defined environment. You have a certain time constraints, space constraints. There are certain rules, very, very well-defined tools that you can be using, like a basketball ball, you know, the court has a certain size, or tennis has a racket and a particular size of the tennis ball. So this is prescribed world. This reminds me the world of society, right? And I kind of enjoy that I can learn the essence of these rules, of these sports. I can make a good interpretation. I can master them and maybe succeed in competition. But on the other hand, I want to have an agency. I want to have a capacity. I want to have a self-efficacy, as Bandura is saying, self-efficacy of belief that I can thrive also in the environment that I create myself. So if the world that society offered to me is not enough for me and for my creativity, well, then I can also create my own world and create my own rules and change the world the way I believe it could be. So, and these navigation between structured world and unstructured world gives you just more freedom in your life to harness the opportunity that your life can bring to you. And I guess this is what is carried through our practice and through our artistic, I mean, training practice and artistic practice. This is what we try to kind of offer to our students, have that opportunity or have that power, have that belief and adaptive tools to be able to understand existing rules and thrive in them, not to suffer there and not be, you know, like be burdened by what was proposed. And also be creative in order to create a world that maybe would be suiting for you better, creating your own company, creating your own performance, creating your own game, creating maybe your own sport. No, no one knows what are your potential. So I would really always wish that my students becoming, first of all, greater than I am, and also maybe break the rules of the society and what society dictates is right or what is wrong. You know, every culture has their ideas and their values, and maybe you can create your own values.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I really wanted to get you on for and sort of feeds in nicely with that is for a number of years I've treated runners as a physiotherapist and just given them gym exercises, just isolated movements, and it helps some of the sedentary or deconditioned runners to an extent, but then they still don't move like the Kenyans overseas. Like there's something about the Kenyans, they just dance across the ground and move so beautifully, and there's just something missing. I was wondering like what your thoughts are on that in terms of like that piece that the Kenyans have that we don't have. Yeah, and how do you train that?
Look, what is missing is love for life. That's what is missing.
Yeah.
If you have a love for life, there is a harmony. There you create a harmony, right? So I think we train because we want to be healthier, we want to have a good condition, you know, like we want to have a strong heart and, you know, have this kind of endurance capacity. And we want to maybe say to others, like, look how far I was running and how good I am and look what is my timing. But it's very different to when you move in the world because you love to engage with the world. You are running because you want to meet someone, right? And it's good that you meet, you mentioned in Africa, my friend from Congo, Bode. Yeah. He was an amazing athlete, an amazing dancer in the same time, as we can always see a great wrestlers from Africa or great dancers. They can sing and they can fight. And you see it in many different sports, how gracious they are. And they are very rhythmical. And he told me something very, very beautiful. His father asked him always to deliver a letter to his friends outside of his village. And he could not understand like what all his childhood is to go and run to another village to deliver some kind of message to his friends here and there. And only later on in his life, he learned that his father did that to him so he can see different music in different villages and like meet a slightly different cultures in a different region. And so, but you know, this there was this need to deliver a message, to go to someone, to help to someone, or you know, there's some kind of social aspect to it. You know, I don't run because I need to train. Look, I run almost every day, right? Even if this is not my primal sport, right? I do some other things maybe now. I nevertheless run a lot because I just love the grace of the movement of running. But I do not run because I want to have more endurance or because I need a certain time. I measure how I'm running, like how much I run per kilometer, but I also measure how do I feel when I run. So for example, if I feel after certain kilometers that my technique is declining, I am adjusting my speed. I am not pushing because, let's say my heart and my muscles, they can. But I understand because of the tiredness that is there, and I can push over the tiredness, of course, like everyone can. I love pain. I was as an athlete from early childhood. You can deal with the pain. But the problem is that if your technique declines, if your rhythm, if your coordination declines because you're tired, the energy starts to leak. And when energy starts to leak, you just start to grain the joints. You just destroy them. You devour your cartilage. You just you just basically wear off your body, and then you will feel miserable when you are older. And the consequences are harsh, right? And also, if you do really long runnings and you do not feel yourself, if you forget somehow yourself in that activity, you deplete kidneys. And kidneys is a source of your life energy. So we need to be a little bit careful what we are doing there. And I also do not think that you need to necessarily run marathon or half marathon. And you do not necessarily need to do it in a certain time. This is what culture tells you. And we are like a little puppets of a culture. You know, culture tells us, you know, everyone needs to be an Ironman. And this is, that's when you're an Ironman. And then you need to run a marathon in a certain amount of time. But that's culture's idea. That's not your idea. But we adopt these cultural values because we are so little in touch with ourselves. Our lives are so depleted. We are so depleted in ourselves. Our lives are so meaningless that culture needs to provide us a certain ideals to which we then need to fit. But this thing, you know, like if you run every day, I was running in the woods because I need to help my father to collect the woods or to bring the food. You know, like my father said, oh, I didn't bring enough of bacon to the mountain. So run down and bring it back, you know, or, oh, I needed to tell the mom that, you know, oh, go and tell your mom. So, you know, you run from the mountains down 15 kilometers and then you walk it up again. You're completely dead either after, no, not 15 kilometers, I'm exaggerating, 15 kilometers, you know, back to the village. And somehow you wake up and you have a good endurance. You do not know how you gain that endurance, but you just have it. And you do this cross-country running and you are okay. And you know what is happening? That kind of lifestyle is still in me. So when I go to mountains and now my father is old, so he doesn't walk with me in the mountains. But when I'm in a mountain, I have the need to run. So even if I'm 50, I'm still running in the mountains like crazy. Yeah. I'm still running upwards and downwards, but not because I want to measure it, because I have a love for it. And with that love comes a music and harmony.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's great. Like, so like I'm probably guilty like of getting really attached to running and trying to chase a time and get better with a time and, but I do love running. Like I do love like going out for a run. It makes me, I love going for a run in the bush and I just feel awesome like after it generally and even during it, it makes me like just relax and be myself and I generally think quite clearly after it for some reason. And but yeah, it's I guess for a lot of
this. Can I add something to it? Look, I when I teach in a mentorship by students, I explain this need for run or need for time in a slightly different way. So let's see how the consciousness expands. So also one of the co-founder, one of the company that I have is one of the best ultramarathoners in the world, right? So I have in my team one of the best ultramarathoners in the world. And I explain it like this. You can run on the treadmill. There is nothing bad about it. You can do treadmill and you will be perfectly trained. You can be like an amazing world-class runner training in a treadmill. It's possible. But the consciousness is very low because on the treadmill, you know, kind of, or machine pulls you or you pulling the rolling machine, you know, the treadmills.
Yeah.
And you can think about whatever you want. I mean, you can even watch a YouTube or you can even watch a movie or Siri while you're, you don't have to be attentive. Okay, that's like a lowest type of consciousness or awareness or mindfulness. The little bit better one is that you go on athletic court, you know, like you go on athletic oval and you do the rounds there, but then you're like a little rut, you know, like, oh, you're just running around and that gets really quickly boring. After 4 kilometers, I'm so bored, I don't know what to do with myself in an athletic oval. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know, I observe the athletes there. I don't know, I'm meditating there, but after 4 kilometers is my max. When I hit the 10 kilometers, I'm like, oh, what am I doing here? So that's a little bit better. But then a little bit better is when you leave athletic oval and you go into a landscape. It can be whatever landscape, a city, or it can be mountains or whatever. That's a little bit better. But a little bit better than that is when you go to run for hunting. And he says, oh, suddenly you cannot run for time. And it doesn't matter how fast you run, but how greatly you can navigate and track the environment, how you can map and track the environment and changes in an environment in order to survive. And the highest level of consciousness is when you are not only hunting, but you're also hunted. So that means you go for a hunt, but there might be other animals hunting you as well. And in that very moment, how fast you run does not really matter. It is a combination of different skills that will allow you to survive. Unfortunately, we live such a meaningless lives, you know, like on the chair and then I need to train, or I have an office and then, or I have a company. So then we try to kind of all say, oh, I need to live. I need to have a proof that I lived. So that's why we run up the numbers. But if you would be with me in Slovakia and we would go to a mountain and we would go to observe the bears, and the bears are going to observe you, right? you would be running in a very different way. You would be running, stopping, walking, listening, running faster, running slower, changing the direction, covering your steps, observing where the wind comes, checking what is the weather conditions, because if weather conditions, they change, you might die very easily in mountains. So that's a very another type of running and being in an environment. So you run after the numbers when there is no other meaning to it, when you're focusing on numbers. But what if you would be focusing on of the greatness of your synergies? So it's like how synergetic is your movement? What is kind of harmony, this metastability of your body to move? If you would focus on sensation of your running, you would most probably improve your speed, because you're just more gracious. It costs you less energy to carry yourself around.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, because you're more in your body and, attuned to your environment. But how would someone who lives, like, in such a westernized, like, society, like...
Mindset,
like, or like, how would you make that like a reality? Like, how would you
you are creative, you're a creative being, right? If you like to hunt the numbers, just hunt the numbers and be happy with the numbers. No one said the numbers are bad.
Yeah,
do and run because of the numbers. But eventually you will age, you will get older and you will die. So eventually those numbers will go down and it will make you feel really unhappy. You know, I talk to many people. I meet like maybe, I don't know, 1,000 or 1,500 people a year in person.
Yep.
And I understand the unhappiness when we are aging. We do not want to accept the aging, right? We feel there is something bad about it. We feel bad that you've been running better and now you're running worse because you're measuring the time of the kilometer or mile or whatever you have in Australia. And I just feel we can for sometimes numbers are a good measurement. Sometimes the feeling would be maybe better measurement. Maybe sometimes, you know, I went to run yesterday with my son who is 10 years old, and running with him and kind of talking to him and supporting him, because he said, oh, father, I'm dying. You know, he didn't say I'm dying, but he was close. What can I see? I said, no, you cannot, but let's go on. I was pushing a little bit his limits. It's another type of fulfillment in running.
Yep.
I'll go for a run with someone who is not escapable, or go, you know, so there are, you can create an environment. You are not a victim of an environment. And I just had a feeling that we just passively receive the environment that was given to us, because we have magazines about running, ideas about what we should be doing running. I don't really think that you should be only following the smart people, because, you know, there is not, maybe that's on another talk, but, you know, British Medical Journal posted just like 2 years ago a article when they said there is no evidence-based medicine, because the studies are being paid for a particular reason, are being supported for a particular reason. So there is not as much, it's not like that they are not true, but how do you ask the questions in the science? And why we need to follow the science? Because maybe science has no interest in studying a certain aspect of, you know, I don't know, they want to measure something that they are interested in order to support a certain, maybe a product or maybe a certain idea about why we should be doing what we are doing. So you don't have to say first science and then me. I'm not constrained by anyone and anything. I'm first of all an artist and human being, and I can set up what I would like to measure or what I would like to have a look at, you know?
Oh, no, that's why I've been attracted to listening to you talk, because I was just sort of almost blindly just following what everyone else was and just the obvious. But then you're sort of like enlightened, maybe the more invisible aspects to performance or movement that you kind of, you can see it when you see a good mover, you like a good runner, you or like a runner that you feel like moves graciously and with rhythm. But like, what is rhythm? Like, how do you actually define rhythm, Josef?
Yeah. Okay. Well, there are some good studies. I already mentioned the word. I think Turvey started some good 30 years ago with like mentioning what is the global information sharing within the complex biomechanical systems, you know, like what is the role of fascia, what are the synergies, what is this, what is the metastability or what is the high dimensionality into lower dimensionality. There is an amazing paper on that that was published somewhere in late 70s, I believe. And also, like Nikolai Bechstein, right? We all know so well, the Russian scientist in beginning of last century kind of spent some good time on it. And there were some kind of suggestion how we could be measured the harmony of the movement or how we can be looking at the harmony of movement. What is the dexterity, right? What is the graciousness of the maybe in our case, the runner's move. But what we kind of maybe forget about looking at when we are looking at the quality of the movement is the proportionality. So everyone has a slightly different proportions, like the length of the arms, length of the torso, in proportion to their legs, etc. So I guess it requires a good eye from outside. That means that you have a coach that is outside who can see how the body coordinates and if it can produce fairly effective biomechanical motion, and then also your internal sensation. Because look, this is an interesting work that was done by Jacob Howie. Jacob Howie is an Australian, really amazing scientist that works on predictive coding, free energy principle that is also like a Carl Friston idea. So Jacob Howie, he said, there doesn't have to be authority between you and the world, right? So there's a world in it, there is you. And the way you're running probably creates a certain effect on your physiology. It means you're running and you feel pain in your knees or you feel exhausted. Well, that's a feedback signal from the world that you're probably not doing something well.
Yeah.
So you probably need to adjust something. Are you able to identify like what information is missing, and are you able to identify how to find that information and incorporate it and use it in a creative way? So the world is really the actual feedback signal. Every single running is an opportunity to learn something. Normal people should not be coming to see you if they are running well. I didn't see physio for years. For years, I mean, I have seen physio maybe twice in the last 15, 20 years, right? Yep. So the question is, if you're really feeling yourself, you're sensing yourself, you should be capable of adjusting the way you move, not only the way you run, the way you think. The way you motivate yourself needs to adjust each time you get a feedback from the world, from the way you're dancing with the gravity.
Yeah. Yep. If I was to look at a lot of the runners I see, we have this local event called Park Run. So every Saturday at 8 o'clock, there's multiple venues across Australia, and it's just a free 5 kilometer run, and the local community comes and runs. And it's great socially, culturally, everyone gets out and does something good for themselves at the start of the weekend. But you look across and then everyone is just moving the same. They're kind of doing this fast walking kind of movement. And I feel like they could, and I see a lot of them with knee pain or shin pain, multiple sort of injuries where I feel like they could be avoiding these if they had a greater comprehension of like that they could move better and knew how to tap into different aspects in their body when they moved and were just a bit more aware. Do you feel like a little bit of that in running is a result of, would it be like inactivity, a lack of appreciation, I guess, but then also the environments that we run in you know, bigger shoes, it's concrete everywhere. We often just sit all day and then go for a run. So we're there's a lack of diversity in movement, and then there's no constraints to make us move better. Like, we just sort of plod along the path with no tiger chasing us, or we're not running like away from a bear in a forest. We aren't constrained to move better.
Well, look, if I don't know if we ever in history we've been always doing one activity in our life. I don't think so, right? So we've been active creatures. We probably needed to. I just guess, you know, I'm guessing here from what I read and from my own life experience. You know, you have to collect the woods, and then you have to put a fire on the wood, and then you have to cut something, then you have to lift something, then you have to walk somewhere, then you run somewhere, then you're sitting, then you're laying, then you are, I don't know, staring in the clouds and dreaming. And you do a lot of different activities, and some of them, or several of them, would be something that is similar to kind of running and walking, right? But never really always the same way of running and always the same way of walking. For example, in diverse environment, you know, the walk would always look different. If it's more dense area, if it's bushes, it's slower walk, and you have to use more your arms. Or if it is steep ground, you maybe are on the four and on the two. Downwards is also another type of running, maybe sideways, but we always run always with the, in the same way. So even if you run great, I mean, everything what you do is right, but you always do the same thing, well, you're gonna run into a trouble, which is a similar like to a concept of functional training, which is like the most ridiculous idea I ever heard in my life, right? So let's do the functional training, you know, or strength conditioning training, and you're always doing it in the same way. So you're basically just saying like, okay, just do that and your body will be functional. Your body needs so much more to be functional, probably also move dysfunctionally in order to be functional. It's like going in a mountain and always using the same pathway. Same pathway means depletion. You will deplete your system. So if you're constantly running and you're running well, but your knees are not doing anything else than just that particular coordinated motion, you will just grain the particular pathway in your cartilage, and the muscles will be always executing the same type of movement. There is no variability. And diversity means immunity, and monotony in any environmental situations, like in ecology, if you have like monoculture, one plaque and it all dies, right? But if it's diversity, then the forest or whatever it is, whatever ecological system, will probably survive more. If you have more diversified social group and a group that is tied up to one ideology or whatever, it is more diversified. There's more critical thinking, there's more kind of discussion and discourse going on. But if you have everyone agrees on everything, then this group might run into trouble. That's the same for our body. Do always functional training, do always the same exercises, and you will be running into trouble. And those people that are selling that kind of particular, you know, do this or do that in order to have that result, of course, they are lying, because they cannot understand the subtleties of context in which that particular person operates. So protocols of any kind are just nonsense. Protocols are created because I do not want to be busy with that person, and I do not want to be busy with their development. It's like, I'm going to give you this, and this is going to be the result. What, are we still in a Newton classical physics that I can predict what will happen in the future? No, we are already, this is done. This is like 400 years backwards. Now we are living kind of modern physics idea. We talk about probabilities rather than determinancy, right? Do this and this will be the result. No one knows. So we need to embrace in our life also a little bit of uncertainty. But we hate uncertainties, because our life is already so uncertain. We say, please give me something certain. Tell me that if I do that, I will have that type of results, because I cannot embrace anymore any other questioning. I just don't want to think about anything. I'm so troubled. Please just tell me what to do so I can quacking and be happy. But unfortunately, you regulate your life so much that you become so fragile. You cannot just go and run without watch. You don't have a watch. You didn't measure your time. You are completely helpless. It's like, oh, did I run worse or did I run better? You cannot sense yourself. We lost touch with ourselves, and so we are running into trouble. So this is what we are doing to ourselves. This is what we are doing. And so you believe, you identify yourself. Okay, I will be doing running because this is the best thing I can do. No, you can do so many other things. And you don't have to only go to gym. But of course, I understand you want to look beautiful. So you go to gym. For you, the health is maybe having a strong muscles. Lift, deadlift. You know, if I do deadlift, I will be very strong. Well, deadlift to someone who is doing freestyle wrestling means nothing. You can deadlift 200 kilos or whatever, but like a wrestler will still throw you around as much as they want because they can communicate and you cannot because you're lifting just the weight, which doesn't downgrade the weightlifting. Weightlifting is an absolutely great thing to do. The going to gym is amazing. It's good and everyone should be doing. But careful of how much and what you do there. Sometimes you just have to go there and maybe just mess around and do all the, I don't know, different exercises in a different way.
Yeah, no, fantastic. When you say communicate, how do you mean, how could we work on that and get better at communicating with our environment? Like, how do we work on that? Like, how what's a good takeaway?
So look, your brain is computing two streams of information. One stream of information is coming from interoceptors, coming from inside of your body. The other stream of information is coming from outside of your body, right? Now, they are both equally important for the brain, and there's no one privileged over the other. So they both are equally important, right? And your brain is kind of, it's a predictivist Bayesian brain, is the brain that calculates the averages. So it creates kind of a knowledge, creates a hypothesis about what the world is. And the hypothesis is also called like a generative model. So you act under generative models, under the hypothesis of what world is. Now that world is a hypothesis because we do not have a direct access to the world. Is it getting too complicated?
No, it's good. It's okay. Good.
So any living creature is separated from the environment, has a certain degree of autonomy. If it wouldn't be separated, it would not be alive, because separation means that it has a certain identity. It can keep its structure and functions in a low entropy state. It can preserve itself. It will not dissipate into an environment very quickly. So it has some kind of boundary. That boundary separates us from external environment. So communication is necessary, because even if we are separated, we still need to communicate. It's what Francisco Varela calls it, like a beautiful paradox. You are born from the environment and yet you are separated, and we need each other for communication, to exchange the information. Now, we can exchange the information via active states or via perception. So the way we perceive the world and the way we act through the world. So there's this biological prerequisites that we need to communicate. If we stop to communicate, we stop to exist. So that's number one. Without communication, there is no life. In that communication, you have to observe two things. One thing is how you sound as yourself. Sounding as yourself means what? It can mean really how you sound in your voice. If you have a voice that can express many different emotional colors, if you're able to transmit your thoughts to the listeners, if you are able to, navigate in tonalities, you can go lower in tonalities, higher in tonalities. There's a certain vocal flexibility. But you can also say that soundness is also the soundness of your movement. So it means there is a harmony of your movement. Okay. That's the one thing. This is the notion of communication, understanding your capacity to communicate with yourself and having the disposition to communicate with variability. And then you communicate with the external world. Of course, these things are mixed together. They are not separated. And then you communicate with the external world. And what is that? There's this exchange between the speaker and listener. Speaker and listener, you try to communicate, and as you are communicating, you're getting some kind of feedback of what they understood. They give you a certain cues, verbal or bodily cues, what is being understood. And on that feedback, you readjusting your communication style. And that constant adjustment is what I call communication, is this alive dialogue. So I'm not creating a monologue. It's not learned text that I learned somewhere and I'm not responding to. It is kind of alive. You tell something, I respond to it. You respond to me, I respond to you. That's a communication. How to train it? Well, I've done my doctorate on voice and communication and voice and movement. So of course they are ways to train it, but I don't know if your listeners would be interested in that. Interpersonal communication is a very beautiful domain. Of course, we do communicate with each other, and better you communicate, usually more success or more happiness you get in your life, because you constantly communicate with other people, because we are social creatures. We need each other. We depend on each other. So the quality of a communication, the communication with the others really not defines, but greatly influence how you thrive in the environment you are a part of.
Nice. Yeah. Now I follow that. And I'm really interested. I've wanted to ask you this question. If you were coaching a distance runner, their goal was to get better at running. So that's their goal. And so their goal is performance orientated. How much movement variability would you include in their training? Because I think the listeners will find this like hard to like comprehend, because they're like, well, if you want to get better at running, surely you just do running. And that probably is part of it. But then like, how do you incorporate variability? And wouldn't variability like how random do you get with variability?
I understood. Yeah. So running is a very particular coordinative skill, right? And you do not need to do many other like a proprioceptive variable kind of joints articulation, right? So you don't have to deep squat. You don't have to maybe jump really high. You do not have to do some weird stuff with your arms. Nevertheless, because you're constantly doing the same motion, you need to revitalize your system. And revitalizing your system means that you kind of checking, first of all, how your joints are aging through some kind of joints articulation. So you articulate your joints and find out that different variabilities in not only range of motion, but also the quality of the motion and cooperativeness between different joints. So how the whole body communicates together as one unity. And so you are running, and in your, let's say, not running training, you are checking, okay, what was the effect of my running in my joints? So in that checking what is the effect, I would be doing a different articulative patterns that involve spirals, that involve curves, that they involve a different level changes in order to identify what information your system starts to lack, so we can bring it back and make your system more vital, more healthy, more robust, right?
Yeah.
So that is the one way. So this is more like, I don't engage in static or postural stretching or dynamic stretching that is on the spot, but I would probably involve in something that would allow me not only to understand the age of my joints, but making my joints more robust and more resilient to not gain some kind of inflammation or sensation of stiffness or maybe a potential damage in my other tissues. And of course, thinking not only of the joints, but thinking of the whole fascia network, which is just informational network, basically.
Yeah.
That would be one thing. Secondary thing is if playfulness with who you are is gone, you would probably, not everyone, but because we are different individuals, but I would involve certain amount of play. Certain percentage of the training should go to unstructured play, to just have a fun and enjoy being me and being in the game-like situation like a child, which of course greatly contributes to your performance, because your feeling of self, happiness being me as I am, happiness being able to express myself in a diverse way, of course, greatly contributes to your athletic performance. Then there is another element that is important. If you're a professional and you want to be great endurance athletes and you know that you go over your limits, then what has to come in is that maybe a pharma has to come in and surgery has to come in, and this will help you to become a better, more successful athlete if you want to go that type of road. But of course, there I do not want, and I'm not willing to help you, you know, like if you want to take medications or if you want to damage your body, I will be not assisting you increasing your performance if I have the feeling that you would be, that it would be not beneficial to your older age. So I would not block you from it. I would not try to persuade you don't do that, but I would just not be helping you in that way. I would help you to, for your well-being and increasing your performance to a limit within which I believe it's constructive for your vitality. Afterwards, someone asked me about it. Maybe I have to be honest to the listeners also. When they asked me, would you be, because I had few like Olympic champions that been working with us, why you would be working with a famous athlete? You would work with a famous athlete because of the fame and the money, but otherwise you would not work in that field. You don't necessarily want people to like, no, I don't want to say destroy, but you don't necessarily, you know, like help people to push themselves to the edge. And you know, athletic world is a very specific world, and this is like, You are doing something for a medal or some kind of reward, then I do not necessarily have to follow what the culture says. You know, like you are only someone when you get the golden medal, or but I believe you can be a great human being also otherwise, right?
Yes.
Because I believe there would, with the great, also a lot of bad came with too much of competition.
Yeah, that's great. I really agree with that approach of, prioritizing the athlete's overall health and sustainability and just that balanced approach of making sure overall they're just becoming a better human or like a more wholesome human. It's just a healthier way and it makes me more comfortable as a running coach, feeling like that it's never becoming more than that. I don't know. That's just my personal opinion too. So I agree.
Yeah. but of course, the world, you will help even the world champion. You're going to help them to get there better. You're just not going to do it through the means of, I don't know, a pharma or means of, I don't know, like very consciously damaging the athlete's body, pushing them and injecting them maybe because, you know, they like this, they can get rid of the pain very quickly. One athlete asked me, a basketball player, could I help that particular person with knee? And I say, of course I can, of course, no problem. And so the person asked me, so which exercises I need to do? I said, no, wait, no exercises, because exercise, isolated exercise for the knees, won't help on a long run. We would have to work on overall coordination. And then the athlete asked a very, very nice question. Yeah, but that requires a lot of energy and maybe an unconscious effort. And I don't know if I have time for it. And so it was, that's very honest, you know, because certain approaches are more expensive than another, right? So they're like a fast solutions and they might be working. I do not know them. And I know more those that probably might bear the fruit over a longer period of time, right? So if you have a problem with the knee and you do not want to improve your coordination, I don't want that your muscle gets stronger to hold it together. I have a good story about this. You know, yeah. I was running in the mountains often, let's not talk about mountains. Let's talk about diverse landscape, up and downs. And I started to feel kind of tight in my knee, right knee. And I said, wow, something is wrong. I'm going to see my friend. He's a physio. So that was one of these visits in these 15 years. And I came for consultation. I said, look, is something wrong with my knee? And he says, well, you know what I see? I see you have a jumper syndrome. I was playing basketball for many years and you're a little bit tight, I feel. Like you do not do probably much of stretching. I said, wow, do I have to do stretching? And he says, yeah, you have to. Stretching is very, very important. You know, I said, I have to call all my students. I always tell them, don't stretch, just move. So I was laughing about it. But anyway, I said, okay. Look, I have a tight tendons around my right knee. There seems something, there is an atrophy of my one of my muscles. And I said, okay, I understand. He gave me some isolated exercises, but I didn't do that. I went back to running and I recorded myself to see where I'm doing a mistake. And I realized that my right step is shorter than the left one. I said, wow, that's really weird. And every third or fourth step, I do not really run properly through my foot. It seems like I'm doing something weird. There's a weird habit. And I'm saying, okay, what will happen if I change the length of that step that I'm paying attention to it? What if I suddenly, so I changed the length of that step, I changed the landing, suddenly my spine a little bit readjusted, suddenly my muscle around my knee grew back, and suddenly my tendons open up. And it doesn't matter what came first, the atrophy or the bad step, it doesn't matter what are the causality, it could be either way around, but just changing of that step remove all the troubles from my right knee. And I came back to him and I said to him, look, without isolated exercises, without stretching, I am back. And he says, yeah, I understand, but I have no time to go to run with you and check what's wrong with you. I need to help you right now.
Yeah.
So you can get rid of the current pains that you have. And so that what I'm trying to say to you now is that I can help you in that longer run of change rather than that acute change of the pain that you currently have. There you need to go to doctor. I don't have that knowledge. Plus, there is another important thing. If you would ask me to help you to become a better runner, I always work with your coach, because yes, I feel like I'm good in what I'm doing, but I will be never as good as the running coach. When I was creating a training for ice hockey youth program, I worked with the trainers because they know what these kids and what the future athletes will need. So this is always in collaboration with someone else. You cannot say, or you cannot pretend, okay, you're the master of the movement, you know, you can help anyone. No, you can help, you can only contribute to the development of a top athlete with their coaches and with their amazing knowledge that they have.
Yeah, that's great. I really like that story, especially about your knee. I've changed how I practice the last 2 years. For 11 years, I was in a business where I saw patients for half an hour, 15 patients in a row, and you just didn't have the time to really get to know the patient well and really intimately get to know how they move. And you just felt like you're guessing a fair bit of the time. And now I practice from home, and I've got the luxury of booking in longer appointments and going out on the street and watching people run. And it's just not only enhanced my enjoyment, but it's made me learn a lot. But it's made me play around and get creative and try different things with each patient and get to know them. And it's funny, like the cues and the technique changes. They've been vast and many, and a lot of them actually have worked or helped, but there's been no one set method. There's been a few similarities in what I've done, like put little hurdles out on the road to get people to move differently and land differently, and get them to run over and in bare feet or just feel like that different motion and then feel that, oh, hang on, my knee pain doesn't hurt when I do it like this, or, oh, that feels faster. And then you're helping them discover it with them. And I've sort of had a personal experience too, along the lines of working on someone's coordination, which 3 years ago, I would not have done that. I didn't know.
It's funny. When an athlete has a problem, he's sent to a strength conditioning trainer, and they do a great job, of course. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say here is that maybe the athlete should be first sent to coordination trainer.
Yeah.
Before he goes to strength conditioning. So, you know, like if you have a problem, you probably do not coordinate something well. It doesn't necessarily mean coordinate within your body. Maybe you do not coordinate your life activities with your sport. Maybe you do too much, maybe you do too little. So it's like, how do you coordinate things? Because it seems like we can do many things right in a wrong place and a wrong time. So we are all very knowledgeable, but the timing and coordination of our actions are usually not. And we pay very little attention to rhythm and coordination, because that's not easy to teach, because you have to be kind of musician and artist yourself, right? You have to have that feeling for a gracious of the movement, or feeling the coordination, how the limbs are coordinating with the legs, how the torso is twisting. So that requires a little bit more attention. The solutions are not as easy. So I think we made it a little bit too simplistic for ourselves. You have a problem, so let's make you stronger, or let's improve your endurance. That's not enough. I think that's just overly simplified. But I understand why it is happening. No one has time. No one cares about anyone anymore, right? so I understand. And it's also a monetary system, you know, like, imagine that I care for you, how much I will earn. So I don't give a shit about you. You know, I want to see as many people as I can, because that will create a better money for me. And please don't make me too busy. And don't make me to think about yourself and your problem, because I have other people to take care of. And I'm in such a mess that I can organize my own life, you know. So it's all understandable. I understand why we are running into these troubles. No one is interested in investing in human beings, because there is no money. There is no money in it. There is how much money we spend for preventive medicine, and how much we spend money for curing the diseases. And we know very well why. And it's just, we just have to accept the fact, right, that you'd rather buy a watch than someone watching you, because that's too expensive to someone. And if someone is watching you, you know, they're tired, they're sleeping, they're watching you, but oh my God, I want that this is over and I just go somewhere else. But the watch is there for you all the time, right? But the watch is not measuring the correlation, the causal correlation. You're like, what's the correlation of your heartbeat and your breathing, right? Or your heartbeat and your movement of your arms, you know? And so these correlations are done, you know, it reminds me something. When we started to study the brain, we understood, okay, it's not just one mesh of neurons. There are some kind of regions that are more responsible for one thing and or for another thing, processing different information in different places. Then later on, we understood, okay, so the brain has not certain only a certain region responsible for certain actions, but we understand that those regions are related. So there's a certain relations. And now we are studying how one region influences the another region, right? So this is the same that has to happen in everything. We're moving forward and we need to understand the causal relations rather than dominant, the component-dominant kind of approach. Component-dominant approach is, you have a problem with the elbow, let's solve the problem in an elbow. You have a problem with the knee, let's solve the problem of your knee. Your knees have nothing to do with the problem of their pain. The problem is everywhere around, not in your knees, unless you went and you hit your knee on the corner of the table. Yes, then it's the problem of the knee. But otherwise, it's because of the communication of that whole informational network that surpasses your physical self, that extends itself into an environment, physical and social environment. But this is too expensive and too difficult to think about. So we want a simplistic, simple, prescribed rule-based programs that will make our life easier, structured, and you don't have to think about anything. Just go there, do this, and this would be the result of it.
Yeah, that's so true, and you articulate it so well. Josef, I'm wary of your time, and I feel like you've been so generous with all the information and what you've talked about today. And I feel like a lot of runners will listen to this podcast, and it will raise some question marks about their own journey and whether they can be more open with how they think about things. And I know we just were sort of saying the world is complex and it's hard to simplify things down into one or two points, but is there a parting message from this podcast? I just can't get out of my head the last couple of years is just the idea of dance and whether runners should dance more, because no one dances really down here, and how would you incorporate that into your running training? And you do like some amazing online offerings through Fighting Monkey with Zero Forms and things like that. Would that be a potential avenue, or like, would you have any like parting messages?
Okay, I don't want to self-promote myself here, so I don't want that we go into our online programs. People can discover and find out for themselves. But
yeah.
Look, when you study, I was like at 20 years involved into kind of understanding traditional medicine, Chinese medicine, etc. Even though I have no interest in becoming a doctor of Chinese medicine or anything. But when you look at the traditional text, you said that all the forms, it's all these energy forms or healing forms, they are all coming from dance. The dance is number one, okay? So that's a very important information. The other important information, when you look at the mountain culture where I'm coming from, dance has been part of everything, right? So if you could not dance, you would probably not make it in that society, because in the evening, everyone goes, drinks and shouts and screams and sings and dance, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, traditional societies in Africa, you know, like the greatest warriors are the greatest dancers, and the most fertile women are the female that they dance, because they show their endurance, they show their graciousness of their movement. Animals, they dance when they are mating. So, but somehow we removed it from our life, and we feel like, oh, you know, I'm a strong man, how I could be dancing, what a bullshit, you know, like, cause I can, I was in Australia, I can imagine how they might feel like, oh, shall I be dancing right now? See, all, you know, in Australia, everyone looks beautiful, you know, like, because of course you have to go without t-shirts to Bondi Beach or Bondi, right?
Yeah.
Or go, you know, Golden Coast, I see like, this is Australian beautiful people. So you have to look good. I accept that. I have no problem with that. And also I love to look at the train bodies. But people dance, because the dance is like a human expression, you know, like there is just this graciousness in it. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean go and do ballet or don't do some kind of folk dance that has a prescribed kind of steps. But dancing in a rhythm and being with the rhythm is dancing with the seasons, dancing with the seasons of your life. This is what I mean, you know. Of course, my wife, she was, and she's still a really amazing dancer. And I meet many dancers, and I work with dancers because I work in art and I work in theater. And, you know, you meet these people. These are amazing people that are dancing, and they, let's say, switch to wrestling or jiu-jitsu. They are doing so well, right? And I work now with the freestyle wrestlers. I hope people in Australia know what that is. Yeah. So freestyle wrestling, and freestyle wrestling, you could see in Africa, you could see in Iran, you could see in Tajikistan, and all this, like, it's spread it all around the world. This is like the base for grappling, right? These people can dance. These are like a gymnastically well-equipped people, and they have a good rhythm. They can change the levels. It's just so fantastic to look at these animals. They are like animals. So yes, the dancing in some way or another should be part of your life. If it's not, it's okay. Just close yourself in a room, take your boyfriend or girlfriend, dance together a little bit, and just enjoy the hugging, or, you know, shifting the weight from one foot to another, or go for 5 kilometers run and run in the craziest possible way. You know, I make it a theater show, you know, so at least entertain the others. Like, how horribly I could dance this weekend. I will run so bad that everyone will record me on the camera, and I will become like a viral crazy runner from Australia. They should do like this crazy running in Australia, like you throw the arms in the wrong way, and maybe that could be the way. And anyway, I love that you do a podcast for runners, and I think everyone who runs is doing such a great thing for themselves. I love running myself, so keep on running, and while you are running, pick up flowers from the ground and some snakes and fight with alligators and survive, please, and survive.
Thanks so much, Joseph. That was great. And once again, like, people can find you quite easily online. I really enjoyed this chat, and I know many other people will. So thanks so much for accepting my invite today, and I really appreciate it.
Of course. Take care, and thank you. Thank you for all that.
No worries.